The sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald is a tragedy that has touched many people, but none more than the surviving family members of the 29 crew members who lost their lives aboard the ship. Just ahead of the 50th anniversary, they gathered for a memorial dedication in Washburn to honor the men who died. Danielle Kading has more.
Missy Clark Nabuzny was 11 when she lost her grandfather. She remembers wet snow hitting the windows that night as she and her sister Chrissy watched the news.
And we both were just staring at the screen like, what's going on? And my mom was just freaking out, very upset, sobbing.
Her grandfather, John Simmons, had been aboard the SS Edmund Fitzgerald. The television showed a picture of the boat, which was lost that night. Alan Coleman was second cook aboard the ship. His son, Bruce Coleman, remembers hearing his mother making phone calls half the night.
My mom, was 38 years old and had five kids, so you can figure what was going in her mind.
The two gathered recently in Washburn for a memorial dedication to the 29 crew members just ahead of the 50th anniversary of the Fitzgerald's sinking. The tragedy would have a lasting effect that led to improvements in weather observations and safety on the Great Lakes. I'm standing at the Superior Entry, where the Fitz sailed into the lake carrying 26,000 tons of iron ore bound for Detroit on November 9th, 1975.
The shipping captains made comments on what a beautiful day it is, but we knew the storm was coming.
That's Steve Ackerman. He's an emeritus professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says the storm was typical of the gales of November. The National Weather Service originally forecasted a gale warning, but the forecast was later upgraded to a storm warning.
By that time, the Fitzgerald and the other ship had changed what their route was, and they were caught in the worst part of the storm.
The Great Lakes freighter Arthur M. Anderson trailed behind the Fitz. Up to 25-foot waves pummeled the boats. Fitzgerald's captain Ernest McSorley reported hurricane-like winds at times. Great Lakes maritime historian Fred Stonehouse says the ship was damaged in the storm and was taking on water.
McSorley was pumping his boat, had two pumps going, and the intention here was to get the water out, but the pump capacity wasn't enough to handle the water flooding in.
In a final transmission, McSorley told the Anderson, "We're holding our own." But shortly after 7:10 p.m., the Fitzgerald went down without a distress call, 17 miles northwest of Whitefish Point. Stonehouse says the tragedy led to significant improvements in regulations and weather observations.
When the Fitzgerald sank, there was zero weather buoys on the Great Lakes. None.
Now the National Weather Service says there are currently around 130 buoys in stations that are tracking conditions on the Great Lakes, but funding that supports some of those buoys would be zeroed out under federal budget cuts proposed by President Donald Trump. Ackerman says the next generation of weather satellites are also being scaled back. He worries that will set back weather observations.
We'll be back to 1975. Our weather forecast just won't be as accurate.
A NOAA spokesperson denied that the cuts would compromise safety. Around 30,000 people have died in roughly 6,500 shipwrecks on the Great Lakes. The Fitzgerald remains the largest ever lost.
This is him and Eugene O'Brien on the Fitz.
At the memorial dedication in Washburn, Missy Clark Nabuzny shows off photos of her grandfather. She says he was a character, a pool hustler, and the love of her grandmother's life.
She lived her whole life missing him.
Alan Coleman, second cook, Washburn, Wisconsin.
During the ceremony, a bell rang 29 times in honor of the lives that were lost. Bruce Coleman says his dad was a phenomenal fisherman who loved sailing. At the ceremony, he read a poem saying the world changed forever that day.
Darkness has covered my life since, but now healing finally feels here. I can see light again, and I smile.
With the memorial, Coleman says he finally feels he has a gravestone he can visit. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.